Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today marks the return of StoryCorps to Tulsa for a four-week visit collecting stories and conversations about love, special relationships, living through historic events and times, moments of clarity and transformation, stories about family, culture, and place. StoryCorps, located in an Airstream trailer mobile studio, will be at the Guthrie Green and begin collecting those stories today. Since 2003, StoryCorps has become one of the largest oral history projects ever. StoryCorps has collected over 50,000 interviews, which have been archived and stored at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And you can hear how that archive is growing each Friday at 7:25 on Morning Edition or at the StoryCorps website. Beyond the permanent StoryCorps locations in Atlanta, Chicago, and San Francisco, and the mobile unit, the project now has also embarked on a series of special initiatives, collecting stories from military families, teachers, griot and Latino culture, and for families with members suffering memory loss. StoryCorps is the brainchild of Dave Isay, the founder and president of StoryCorps. He's a talented producer and radio documentarian who's received numerous honors in broadcasting, including 6 Peabody Awards and a MacArthur Genius Fellowship. He's authored a number of books, including 3 bestsellers relating to StoryCorps: Listening is an Act of Love, Mom, a Celebration of Mothers from StoryCorps, and All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. I spoke with Dave back in 2008 upon the first visit of StoryCorps to Tulsa, and we repeat that conversation today on Studio Tulsa. Dave Isay, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, I'm so glad to be here.
What was the inspiration for StoryCorps?
Wow, StoryCorps came out of basically everything that ever happened to me in my life, I guess. It started 5 years ago. And as you know, it's a simple idea. We built this booth to start in Grand Central Terminal, and you bring a loved one to the booth and go inside, and the door shuts, and you're in this sacred space. The lights are low, and you sit across from your grandmother, for instance, for 40 minutes, and you talk, and you ask questions. Most people ask kind of the big life questions, like what are the most important lessons you've learned in life, or how do you want to be remembered? At the end of 40 minutes, 2 CDs have been burned. One goes home with you. The other stays with us and goes to the Library of Congress. So your great-great-great-great-grandchildren can hear your grandmother's voice and hear your voice and get to know you through your voice and your stories. And, of course, excerpts are played on KWGS and all across the country on public radio and appear on our website and in this book, Listening is an Act of Love. I was a public radio producer for about 15 years before starting StoryCorps, and I guess one of the real things that happened that got me started was a documentary I did with 2 kids growing up on the south side of Chicago that I did about 15 years ago.
Ghetto Life 101, yeah.
Ghetto Life 101, and I gave them tape recorders and asked them to record a week in their lives, and it was the first kind of citizen-recorded documentary that was ever broadcast on NPR. And I saw when I gave these kids tape recorders that when they interviewed their own family members, having the microphone gave them the license to ask questions they'd never asked before. And the conversations continued long after the tape recorder was turned off. And then when these relatives passed away, and all of them, all of the older relatives that are heard in that documentary basically have died, these tapes became incredibly valuable to the kids. So seeing the power that had was certainly part of what led to the creation of StoryCorps. When I was a kid, when I was 13 years old, I interviewed my grandparents. We had a tape recorder around the house. And I had this grandmother who was this incredible larger-than-life character, and she had these 3 sisters, and they were orphaned in the flu epidemic of 1917. And I interviewed them, and I had their voice on tape. It was a lousy interview, I'm sure. I was a 13-year-old, you know, dumb kid, but I had their voices on tape. And then that whole generation died. And when I was 13, 14, 15. And when I was 21 or 22, I went looking for that tape, and I couldn't find it. And still, all these many, many, many years later, I look for that tape when I go to my parents' house, and I know I'll never find it. But, you know, what I would give to hear those voices. So part of what I wanted to do with StoryCorps was make sure that no one ever had that experience again. And that's why these go to the Library of Congress. And really, when people come and participate in StoryCorps, they're leaving a legacy for future generations. And, you know, what we believe in StoryCorps is that listening to a loved one in this way, asking a loved one about their lives, taking a few minutes to look in their eyes and talk to them in this way tells people that they matter and won't be forgotten, which is all any of us really wants to know.
You know, one of the things you write in the book, you write that, you know, history is often written top down, and this is really telling history bottom up. And, of course, I know a great inspiration had to be one of the innovators in telling history bottom up, and that would be the late Studs Terkel, who we just lost. Was that was he an inspiration to you? I know he was there when you opened the booth.
Yeah, he was more than an inspiration. I mean, he was a great friend to the project and cut the ribbon on our first booth when we opened it up, and is an inspiration to all of us at StoryCorps. And and he threw down that gauntlet when he cut the ribbon that opening day 5 years ago, and talked about the importance of bottom-up history, history that's told through our voices and our stories and our hearts. You know, he said when he cut the ribbon, he said, you know, we're in Grand Central Terminal, and we know who the architect of Grand Central Terminal was, but, you know, who laid this floor, who built these walls? Those are the stories that we're going to learn about in this booth. Those are the stories that represent who we are as Americans at our best. And, that's something we've been working to fulfill ever since. We've done about 24,000 interviews over the last 5 years, and we're growing every day. The interviews happen in pairs, so it's about 45,000 participants who've come through the StoryCorps booth. And, you know, and it is a bottom-up history, but it's also, in many ways, because of your listeners know this from listening to the clips on public radio, because of the nature of the questions that are being asked, not only are you getting history, but in a way what the facilitators, who are the people in the booths helping with the recordings, are collecting is really the wisdom of humanity, because the kind of questions that are asked are often big life questions.
Universal questions.
Universal questions, and questions about wisdom. What have you learned in life? So it's really a privilege for all of us at StoryCorps every day to be working on this project.
And the idea that a loved one or a friend, a person not skilled at asking questions, or is the one asking questions. In the case of Studs Terkel, you know, he's a masterful interviewer at getting people to tell their stories. When you go back to the 1930s, during the WPA project, which was another great time of oral histories, it was skilled interviewers. The idea, though, that a loved one can get those same sort of stories, that's the innovation of StoryCorps, I think.
That certainly is what makes it different, but I think Studs would be the first to say that this isn't rocket science. You know, what Studs said that, the best question he ever asked was, you know, and then what? You know, this is our mission at StoryCorps is to honor and celebrate each other's lives through listening. And this is a project about listening, and all of us are capable of listening. And it's just about, thinking about what you want to talk about, figuring out what's really important, asking and looking someone in the eyes and really listening to them. And that act of listening, you know, is a great way to honor someone who's important to you.
As the project began, did you ever have any fears that you would hear the same sorts of stories over and over again, and they, you know, and actually you do hear the same sorts of stories over and over again, but they're each unique in their own way?
Yeah. You know, StoryCorps it started out as this really crazy experiment. I had no idea what was going to happen in the booth. You know, we put this booth in Grand Central Terminal, and we just threw open the doors and invited people to come in and talk to each other. And I had all kinds of concerns about what was going to happen. And as I said, 24,000 interviews later, 23,000 interviews later, every one of those has gone miraculously well, which I think speaks to the respect that people bring to StoryCorps and the professionalism of the people who are working in the booths. I was a radio producer, but I started StoryCorps as a human service project, which it remains to this day. We are here at the service of participants to give them this experience, to give them the opportunity that everybody says that they wish they had. I mean, every single day, I've been traveling around a lot lately, and whether I'm traveling or whether I'm here, 10 times a day, you know, someone comes up to me and says they wish I had recorded my grandfather, my grandmother, you know, my brother, whoever it is who's been lost. And this project gives people the opportunity to do that and the tools to do that. And so it was and is a human service for people to give them the opportunity to interview a loved one. I did not know if we would get broadcast content out of the booth. It wasn't my primary concern, and I suspected we wouldn't. And I did suspect that there were only a finite number of stories that could be told between grandparents and grandkids, and eventually they would start to repeat. And one of the miracles of StoryCorps is that not only have they not repeated, but, you know, every week they just seem to be getting better. And when you listen to these stories, and when you read Listening is an Act of Love, the stories just kind of explode off the page and remind us, you know, that our stories, the stories of regular people, beyond a shadow of a doubt, once you, you know, read this book or listen to these stories, are more interesting and more important than the kind of celebrity nonsense we're fed 24 hours a day everywhere we look, other than public radio, of course.
My guest today is Dave Isay, the founder of StoryCorps, a veteran public radio producer, documentary maker, and he's the founder of StoryCorps and Sound Portraits Production, which is his production company, which puts StoryCorps into place. He has a new book, Listening is an Act of Love, a celebration of American life from the StoryCorps project. It's a beautiful book filled with, most of these appeared on the radio at one point or another, but some of them didn't. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually counted the stories, but I'm not even sure if most of them appeared on the radio. I know more than half of them did. But, you know, I've done books before, and I am very aware that just transcribing what has been broadcast does not make a book and is not necessarily appropriate for print. So what we did, we put together Listening is an Act of Love after we had done our first 10,000 interviews. It actually came out in hardcover a year ago and paperback this past week. And what I did was the facilitators mark what stories might be appropriate for print or broadcast, might have that universal kind of quality to the story that touch, move, or make people laugh kind of widely and has something universal about it. So we took about 500 stories from those first 10,000 stories and printed them out. And I, you know, read them to see how they work on the page, and found those stories that were just, you know, as I said before, kind of exploded off the page, were just kind of poetry, stories that kind of feel like almost like short stories or you know, little novels in and of themselves, and put those into the book.
I want to ask you, we're going to hear one of those stories now. And this is sort of a very universal experience, I think, for a lot of generations growing up. It's, you know, at the point where a child starts to feel just a little bit bigger than their britches, I guess, as we would say here in Oklahoma. But this is a universal experience. And you had Dr. Monica Mayer, who is actually half Native American and actually works for her Indian tribe now. And she has one of these universal lessons about, you know, what you're going to make of your life. Can you tell us a little bit about this particular interview?
Sure. This is Monica Mayer, and she's interviewed by her cousin, I believe, Spencer Wilkinson. And this was recorded on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation in Newtown, North Dakota. And you summed it up really well. This is Monica talking about an incident from her childhood.
My father, he was full-blood German, and my mother was full-blood Indian. And, you know, it was pretty tough in the 60s growing up, you know, half-breed, so to speak. And I must have been about 7th grade, 8th grade, and I wasn't doing well in school. And I'm the oldest of three girls, so our dad packed us up in his pickup, took us out to his old homestead land, which is about 18 miles north of Newtown, in the middle of nowhere. And he packed us some lunches and some water. All three of us girls dropped us off out there at 7 or 8 in the morning, and said he wanted all the rocks picked in a northwest corner in one big pile, and that he'd come back that night to pick us up, and it better be done. So there we were, working hard all day long. He comes back, and we're dirty, stinky, sweaty, sore muscles, crying. We must have been a sight to see. And my dad pulls up in his pickup, and I looked at him, and I said, since I was the oldest, my two younger sisters are, like, hiding behind me, "Dad, we don't think this is fair. We have to work this hard." And I just remember him saying, "Is that right? Well, do you think I like working hard like this every day?" "No." He said, "You know, your mother said you girls don't like school and you're not doing very well. And we decided that you're going to come out here and work like this so your hind ends will get used to how your life's going to be when you get older." So I said, "Well, if we got good grades, do we have to come out here and work this hard?" And he said, "No, that's the deal." Well, you didn't have to bust my head twice up against the brick wall, but my two younger sisters and I were laughing about that because they remember that particular day exactly the way I remembered it. One day of hard labor changed everything.
That's one of the StoryCorps interviews as a part of the book, Listening is an Act of Love. That's Dr. Monica Mayer. And my guest today is Dave Isay, the founder of StoryCorps and the Sound Portraits production. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa.
And Rich, I just want to point out that Monica Mayer did end up becoming a physician. And she's a physician on the Indian Reservation. One of her sisters became a nurse, and the other sister is head of social services on that reservation. So that lesson was well learned.
Yeah. These stories sort of break down into a number of categories, and I guess these are pretty common categories for how these interviews sort of move. It's either about growing up, tell me about the family, tell me about what you did when you were, when you were young and working, or tell me about, your dedication to your work, or tell me about some adversity that you overcame. These seem to be very common themes.
Yeah, well, the way the book is organized into five sections, with 10 stories in each section, 50 stories. And the first section is about family, home and family, and that's 10 stories of, as you said, of memories of growing up, and kind of powerful stories about home. Second section is about work, and I think Monica's story leads that section off. And then the third section are journeys, different journeys that people who came into StoryCorps wanted to come in and talk about. And then there are two sections about American history, as you said, about bottom-up history through our voices and through our stories.
We don't have tape on this one, but this was, to me, it was one of the most vivid written stories in the book. And this was a steel worker by the name of Ken Kobus. And to hear him describe as a 16-year-old going into the steel mill and, the older hands sort of let him start the process for pouring steel.
Yeah.
He had to hit a little dynamite charge and the steel starts coming out and it's, 3,000 degrees. The way he described that, I don't think any writer of fiction could come up with the feeling of love and respect for his job and just the vivid description of making
what it
steel.
Looks like for,
making steel.
It's extraordinary. I've been on book tour for quite a while, and I had the honor of meeting Ken just about a week ago in Pittsburgh. And Ken is exactly as it reads in that piece. And that's part of, I think, the power of StoryCorps. We're surrounded by so much kind of phoniness. It's hard to tell sometimes what's real and what's an advertisement. When you hear authenticity, it just is kind of like an adrenaline shot right to the heart. And Ken's, at the end of that interview, which is extraordinary, on the written page, it's absolutely extraordinary. And at the end of it, he talks about his dad. Ken was a third generation steelworker. He still works in the mills. And he talks about his dad who was dying in the hospice, and his dad who brought him into the steel mill for the first time when he was 13, that in that scene that you just talked about where he describes making steel so eloquently. And his dad was dying, and he'd make these hand motions all day and all night. And the hospice nurses and doctor would watch him, and they had no idea what he was doing. And Ken recalls in the interview and Listening is an Act of Love, walking into the hospice, into his dad's room one day, and the nurse coming back to him, and they were all around his bed watching him. And the nurse said, we watch your dad all day. We cannot figure out what is he doing. And Ken said, I looked at my dad, and I knew in an instant what he was doing. He was making steel. He made steel until the day he died.
Very moving part of that story. Let's hear another story. This is a great story. George Kaywood. Tell us a little about George Kaywood.
Sure. This is a story in the Journeys section of Listening is an Act of Love, and it's one of the more kind of remarkable reads that when I read it for the first time as an oral history, and it hadn't broadcast when I read it, I was just rocked. And it speaks to a couple of important points to me about StoryCorps. One is the notion that we talked about earlier when we were talking about the kids in Chicago, the idea that the microphone gives you the license to talk about things that you haven't talked about before. And in the print version of this interview, George is interviewed in Los Angeles by his daughter, Gina. And Gina asks him about his father's suicide. George's father had committed suicide when George was 13, and George's father committed suicide using George's gun. And in the interview, George says to Gina, you know, in my whole life, no one has ever asked me to talk about this. Later on in the interview, and you will hear this in this piece of tape, one thing that happens often at the end of StoryCorps interviews, and we suggest this, and it's one of the more kind of, I think, important and moving moments in these interviews, is that the person doing the interview, we suggest, turns the table on the person being interviewed and tells them for a few minutes what they mean to them. And what you'll hear at the end of this interview is Gina turning the tables on her dad. But early on in the interview, the beginning of this interview is Gina talking to her dad about a crippling depression that he went through when she was a teenager.
All right, let's hear a little bit. This is from the interview with George Kaywood.
Dad, one of the most difficult times in my childhood, I think, was one of your most difficult times in your life, and that is when he went through a major depression. Can you tell me about what that was like?
Well, if you've ever been walking down the street, maybe at night, and a huge dog charges you, growling and barking, you know, that moment of utter panic and fear is like that 24 hours a day.
Our bedrooms shared a common wall, and I could hear at, you know, 5 in the morning, you crying, just terrified to go to work and to take on another day.
Do you remember the poem you wrote me?
I do.
Yes. That will my dad ever stop crying?
Yes. It's been like, can I have my dad back?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
When I was going through it, I knew that there was this darkness that I've been chasing off all my life, that I knew if I was going to be genuinely happy, which I wanted to be, I was going to have to face all that darkness.
And yet it's amazing. You are such a wonderful, loving father to us.
Certainly, it's the thing I've worked at hardest in my life. Even though I made a lot of mistakes with you and your three sisters, you have not breathed a breath, Gina, you and your sisters, when you weren't the most important thing in my life. I remember when you were born, looking at you, saying, I have no idea how to be your father. So my goal was, I wanted to be positive with you. I knew I was going to have to say no sometimes, but I wanted that to be against thousands of yeses in the hopes that you would grow up as positive as you actually are.
Sometimes when you did say no, I could bat my eyelashes at you and get you to change your mind.
It still works. Each of the four girls had their own technique. You know, yours was those brown eyes.
Please, Dad.
Well, see, I'm melting on the spot. And, you know, Jill was just so everlastingly on my side that she was hard to resist because she was always working for my benefit. And Janelle, who turned out to be a very capable attorney, remembered everything I ever said. She would say, now, Dad, 4 years ago on this date, you said this, and now you're saying this. Don't you think you're being inconsistent? You know. And then Joanna, that she would grab my face between her hands and turn me to look at her because she sort of said, my dad is an understanding person. He's reasonably bright. If I can just get him to see the truth, he'll surely let me do what I want. And the four of you together, you know, I knew I was whipped.
You know, I think one of the things that my sisters and I have always felt is that you are a great, great man. And I hope that somehow this interview today brings you the honor that I think you deserve.
I wouldn't trade this for every accolade in the whole world. You know, I love you, honey.
I love you, too.
That's it from an interview with George Kaywood from the StoryCorps Project. Dave Isay's a collection of many of the stories, 50 of them in all, of the more than 24,000, I think, that have been recorded and growing each day, even here in Tulsa, as the StoryCorps trailer is here. Listening is an Act of Love is the book. It's out in paperback, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the things that's been very interesting is you're not just going to cities, and you're not staying in Grand Central Station.
Right.
You go to penitentiaries, Indian reservations, collecting these stories. Can you maybe talk about some of those places where you've found some extraordinary people?
You know, there are extraordinary stories anywhere you go. You know, it goes back to that idea that when you take the time to listen to the people around you, your neighbors, your bus driver, your parents, your grandparents, you're going to find, you know, eloquence and grace and poetry. And, you know, when you interview a parent, when you interview a grandparent, whether you can get into the booth or you do it on your own, you are going to find out things you never knew before about them. You know, we have a relentless focus on making sure that we collect gather and honor all Americans. Half of our slots, whenever we pull into a town, are dedicated to outreach interviews. These are folks who might not know about StoryCorps through public radio or through newspapers or through television. So we have been everywhere. We have been to all 50 states, big towns, small towns, every age, every socioeconomic group. And, you know, I think, and again, you know, there are two sides to StoryCorps. One is doing the interview, the experience, and the other is sharing these interviews. And, you know, when you listen to these interviews, which have, and oftentimes you're going to hear an interview from someone who couldn't be more different than you. Just for an instant, you're going to walk in the footsteps of that other person. And I think that that act of walking the footsteps of someone who's so different than you helps us, you know, recognize our shared humanity and how much more we share in common than divides us.
Do you have some favorite questions that you love to hear asked when you hear these interviews put together? I mean, are there just some questions that really you think that almost always elicit interesting responses?
Yeah, we have on our website at StoryCorps.net, we have something called a question generator, and people use that before they come to the booth to prepare. And in that question generator are the best questions, and these are the questions that we found over the last 24,000 interviews seem to work really well. And they are kind of, as we talked about before, questions of the heart. They're not kind of CV, who, what, where, when questions, but big life questions. So, you know, the questions that work, well, the questions that work the best are the questions that you really want to ask your loved one, the questions you really want to know about. But in general, the kind of broad questions that work really well are the wisdom and knowledge questions, like how do you want to be remembered? What are the most important lessons you've learned in life? What was the happiest moment of your life? What did you feel the first time that you saw me? You know, those kind of questions often yield magnificent answers. Interviewing a loved one is the least expensive but most meaningful gift that we can give to one another. And we at StoryCorps, and in fact all of public radio, in collaboration with the Library of Congress, are calling for the country to honor loved ones by listening to them. And you're going to find out something you didn't know before, and many, many times it's going to be a really profound experience.
Well, it's the whole StoryCorps project is a profound experience. I've seen it from the people who've gone through the booth already here in Tulsa and around the country. And, of course, you hear these remarkable stories that are in one way truly singular, incredible moments, but they're also, so many of them are experiences we've all had in one form or another. And I think that's the other thing. It just tells us how alike we all are.
That's absolutely right. And you know, it's thank you for those kind words. And we're thrilled to be in Tulsa. We're thrilled to be collaborating with KWGS. And, you know, it's really we've grown from 5 people to 100 people over the last 5 years, and we're just getting started. And it's those 100 people who work at StoryCorps who are just dedicated with every cell in their body and make this happen. And it's the people who come to the booth who give that booth life. So I just feel really privileged to be working on this project, and I feel grateful that you had me on the air.
Dave, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Dave Isay, the founder and president of StoryCorps, speaking with us back in 2008 when StoryCorps first came to Tulsa and when his first book about StoryCorps, Listening is an Act of Love, came out. He's since written 2 other books about StoryCorps, Mom, A Celebration of Mothers, and All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. StoryCorps returns to Tulsa beginning today in the Airstream Trailer Mobile Studio, which will be located at the Guthrie Green. They'll begin collecting stories today. A new batch of appointments will be available starting tomorrow. That's Friday, October 17th. You can make reservations at our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.